From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 12th day of November, 2010. I'm Todd Gleason at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the program, Steve Hilberg will be here. He's with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center that is funded in part by NOAA and will help us take a look at a changing forecast for the month of November. A bit of rain this week, a lot more colder weather coming next week. Along the way today, we'll hear from John Scholl. He's the president of the Farmland Trust and will help us discuss the 2012 Farm Bill and how last week's elections have shifted that debate. It all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Mike Carey and Morris at 815-941-2189. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
On this Friday afternoon, we're joined by Mike Zuzolo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Mike, just a couple minutes up front here early in the show. Can you take me through what's happened this week? And then when we come back, we'll talk more in depth about the marketplace.
I think generally speaking, in a very brief time period, Todd, we got the numbers from USDA that fed the bull in beans, but they did not feed the bull in the corn and the wheat. And therefore, the corn and the wheat turned to the outside markets and turned to the weather for more indications of where their prices were heading. And we saw that as early as the close of report day when the wheat and the corn turned negative. Beans tried to hold in there throughout the week, but come Friday morning, late Thursday night, with China reportedly seeing over 4% inflation in their October CPI, and a failure, essentially a failure at the G20 meeting to resolve some of these currency imbalances between the United States and China, between those two things and a Chinese rate cut then being talked about, that probably forced the beans to follow the rest of the commodity sector and give up on their micro-fundamental bullishness.
We'll come back in just a moment, Mike, and talk with you some more. Mike Zuzolo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Here's something of interest from the University of Illinois.
In response to the recent infestation of the emerald ash borer to trees in East Central Illinois, U of I entomologist Jim Appleby is offering a 4-page colored leaflet that can help homeowners identify the pest and the D-shaped holes it leaves when it exits an infested tree. The leaflet includes extensive close-up photos that help people know what to look for. The 4-page full-color leaflet includes photos of the insect and the damage it can do to a tree to help people identify the pest. The publication is called How to Diagnose, Detect, and Search for Infestations of the Emerald Ash Borer. It can be purchased for $2 each. Call 217-333-2770 for information on how you can order the leaflets. Appleby said that because of the emerald ash borer beetle, some areas of Illinois are quarantined. He stressed that the best way to prevent the beetle from spreading to new locations is to avoid transporting firewood. And that's something of interest from the University of Illinois.
Something of Interest is a public service of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
This is the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason coming to you today from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City. Mike Zuzalo is still on the phone line with us. He's in Lafayette, Indiana, to talk to us about the commodity markets. Mike, when we had finished our discussion up front, you were moving through the microcosm of what's been happening in the soybean market. Do you think that the soybean market has a near-term bottom in it somewhere?
Well, I think it does as long as the outside markets hold pat. I think we've still got the demand push underway, and I think more importantly for the supply side, Todd, I believe that as the week has gone through and passed through, we've seen more increasing worries and concerns about the South American weather. We had some 100-degree temperatures in Argentina earlier in the week. The crop down there is starting to get a little bit vulnerable. Center West Brazil has missed some rains in some key areas. Some areas have gotten plenty of rains, but it has not been the coverage and the amounts that we have wanted, especially the coverage. And so I think the weather market is still very much alive and well in the bean market. Probably the last thing that makes me think the beans can hold up very well if the outside markets don't throw in the towel and investment funds don't throw in the towel is the fact that there's not a lot of beans out there in farmers' hands at this point, I don't think. And what's out there have been sold, and the next big sale is probably not going to come, but I would guess probably January, February would be the next big selling increment that farmers would be willing to let go of beans. So I think that basis is going to really stay with us and underpin the markets and the beans especially.
Will demand stay strong for the next couple of months?
Well, seasonally it does not, because you know typically our export sales start to decline with, especially with China, because they get their new crop, and there was even talk that they were going to let go of a couple million tons of their own reserves this past week. Haven't seen that actually happen yet, but seasonally we don't keep the demand as strong. I think probably overall we will see it better than normal, especially on these kind of price breaks that we saw at the end of the week, and I say that because even some of the other analysts out there, like ADM, for a perfect example, they did their last conference call on their last earnings report, and they expect that the export market for beans here in the U.S. will actually run longer than normal because the center-west area of Brazil got planted so late. So the export pace here should continue pretty strong into the winter for us. So, yeah, I think overall it will stay strong.
Does this mean in your mind that producers who have beans in storage, whether that's at the elevator or on the farm, should hang on to those beans rather than turn them loose in the next?
That's a great question because, yes, I like keeping 10 beans in the rears at this point. But on the 11 beans, especially with Informa coming out this past week and cutting acreage for 2011 planted bean acres by 2 million in their estimates, I think the trade will be on a hunt now to try and buy bean acres back from corn at this stage. So as we go through the next 30 to 45 days, I'll be wanting to even hedge more 2011 beans. A lot of it will be on paper because a lot of us are scared about the dry weather right now going into the wintertime, but I still like locking in these prices because I think the Board of Trade will have a premium, a big premium, in that 2011 futures market by the time we get into the new year.
Well, on those Informa numbers, do you think they took into account, November beans at this point, and we're talking actually earlier on a Friday morning rather than live today because I'm in Kansas City, but November beans of next year trading where a 12.53 high today and a 12.15, they're down 32 cents at this point, but they rallied pretty sharply. Do you think Informa, when they gave those numbers out, were they working off of the ratio difference, which was pretty sharp in corn and beans as opposed to the closed ratio that has happened in the last week?
I think that, and I also think that they gave up a lot of bean acres to cotton, and that made the bean acres drop a lot. And I think I was thinking about the Informa numbers, and I think generally they're on the right path, that the fast harvest has allowed us to catch up this fall in field work when it was just atrocious this past spring, and farmers did not sit still this fall. They got on it. They got their anhydrous done. They got their chiseling done. So the corn acres are going to be there if Mother Nature's there. Again, the cotton acres are probably overpowering because the revenue is there in the cotton versus the beans down south. But so those things I like about what Informa is talking about, but when it comes right down to it, as a person or an analyst that sends surveys out to my clients in the wintertime, and I'm getting ready to do that, farmers right now haven't had the time to think about it. I think for the most part, they've been too busy in the fields, and they are watching these markets, and they probably won't make the final determination until they see the February average price for crop insurance. They'll have some good clue by the time we get to Christmas, but I think it's just too early right now to get a hard number for the new crop corn and new crop bean, just because, number one, they're just so busy right now, they haven't, I don't think, given it a lot of thought at this point.
Then you have to watch wheat acres when they come out in January and the double crop potential for soybean.
I talked to a lot of clients this past week and week and a half, and they are seeing a very big problem with their wheat, and they're looking at significant acreage shifts. If the wheat goes into dormancy, as bad as it looks, especially in our state of Indiana, we'll see a lot of that wheat turned over and, I think, planted to the corn. So I think that's where you might pick up some extra corn acres just off of that.
Okay, I only left you a minute. Give me a brief overview of the corn market.
The big thing with corn is that it's the follower, because USDA cut exports, and the export sales and the export inspections are telling us in the trade that the USDA is more right than they're wrong, and the global buyers have not come in. My sources tell me they're not going to come in until the first of the year. So corn's a follower. That's what makes these technical levels in the outside markets and in the wheat so important, because if we lose weekly chart support, then I think we'll see a technical round of fund selling that could take us down another 7 or 8% in the corn market.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Thanks, Todd. Have a nice show out there.
Oh, we will. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Dave Dickey, of course, and I'm here at the NAFB. We'll travel back tomorrow. Look forward to getting into the great state of Illinois. Speaking of the great state of Illinois, John Scholl, a native son, is now in Washington, D.C., and president of the Farmland Trust. I spoke with him yesterday about the 2012 Farm Bill debate. Let's first talk about the shift in the makeup of Congress in the wake of the recent elections, and how that may or may not change the 2012 Farm Bill debate systemically.
I think everybody understood going into it that the budget was going to be the main driver in the Farm Bill debate in 2012 or 2011, whenever we were going to take it up. And, I mean, clearly this election has reaffirmed what I think we knew going into it. We know that pressure is going to be intense. The people that have been added into Congress are new members of Congress. A lot of them are Tea Party affiliated, and I think are going to be looking for results 2 or 6 years down the road when they have to run for re-election to show that they came to Washington, they were serious about budget reduction, and that they have something to show for it. Agriculture is not going to be exempt from that. And I think we're going to face a real challenge here in the next couple of years in the Farm Bill, figuring out how do we really try to get down to that legitimate public investment in agriculture that makes sense, that adds value to agriculture and the society in general.
Can we come back before we hit Farm Bill really hard, and because I cut this up, it doesn't matter too much, to things at hand that may or may not get taken up in the lame duck session, and they may not get taken up for political reasons, I suppose, but the ethanol blenders tax, will it be extended? Will the Obama administration make the Tea Party folks vote for that one by not putting it in the lame duck system? And then what happens with the Bush tax cuts? And will they wait on those as well to see what the Republicans and the Tea Party folks have to say about extending those tax cuts?
Well, you asked some very good questions there, and my crystal ball probably isn't any clearer than anybody else's. I can't tell you, everybody in Washington right now is trying to figure out what's going to be the answer to that and try to, you know, exert influence wherever they can. I think if you look historically, though, it's been very, very difficult for lame duck Congresses to come in and really do something major and something substantial. And, you know, while there's always a chance that they could come in and make some monumental decision and make things permanent, I think if you really look at it, I would be very surprised personally if they came in and did much of anything except extend what they need to extend to keep some things alive and then put the questions into the new Congress.
Now, let's move on to Farm Bill. Talk about that. There's a lot of discussion around the 2012 Farm Bill. Most of it, from what I've been able to gather to this point, revolves around how that program might change, whether acres should become a bigger part of the program, whether that means developing county-level triggers for the crops across the entirety of the Midwest, and where do you get the money from? Most people think that that would come from direct payments or lack thereof in the future. Can you sort of outline where the American Farmland Trust feels this debate will settle out?
We're pushing real hard to say, let's take a step back and really do a fundamental assessment of what is that legitimate public investment in agriculture through the federal government. There's a tendency with all farm bills, I think, to really kind of tinker around the edges. How do you fine-tune? What kind of small changes can you make? And I think we've got a terrific opportunity here where we know the budget pressure is going to be significant, and we're going to have to make some changes. We're going to have to make some cuts. And while it's always difficult to say this in a broad stroke, the agricultural economy is pretty strong. And I think both of those really point to an opportunity we've got in the next 2 years to kind of step back and say, you know, let's not worry about some of the smaller changes with ACRE or whatever program you want to choose. Let's figure out what directionally is correct, what policy not only can provide some support to agriculture in an appropriate way, but also as a policy that can help really make it politically sustainable that we can get the support in Congress to maintain over the years. And certainly in that vein, you know, we've been strongly supportive of ACRE. We think conceptually it's a program that does help provide some of that fundamental underlying systemic risk protection that we know farmers have a tough time dealing with, volatility in the marketplace. We want to see that concept grow. And we think we've got some opportunities to continue to move to that direction in a very fundamentally important, different sense than what we've seen heretofore.
Is your argument much harder to make with an Oklahoman at the chair of the House Ag Committee as opposed to a Minnesotan?
Well, that's a good question. I think in some ways it probably is. I think, you know, soon-to-be Chairman Lucas has indicated that he's much more inclined maybe to look at existing programs and, you know, tailor them to different regions and the like. But I think also if you look at the overall mood of Congress and if we look at the trends that we've seen in farm bills in the past where the pool of interests that are looking at that are much broader than it used to be, I could see where there's going to be some of these kind of fundamental questions that, you know, we're going to be forced to address. You can take it through the Ag Committee, then you got to get it through the House floor, then you got to go over to the Senate, you got to pass the muster of the President to sign the bill. There's going to be lots of opportunities to really take a reform kind of agenda forward, and you know, I'm hopeful that some of this kind of debate will in fact take place.
Can you tell me about the differences in the regions across the United States? So there's a difference in terms of what Illinois farmers might think about ACRE, Iowa farmers might think about ACRE. There will be a difference this fall because Illinois was paid by ACRE and Iowa was not. But then if you move to the west, to Oklahoma and Texas, and you get into the cotton growers and into the south where they depend more upon the direct payment for total revenue because that direct payment is a much bigger part of their budget.
Clearly, farm bills typically have been regional in nature. They haven't been so much partisan in terms of the Democrats and Republicans. I think you see that continue as you listen to the debate that's taken place so far. I think as you've characterized it, it's very accurate. You find a lot of the Midwestern interests that are probably a little more accepting of some of the more fundamental reform of the sort that I've talked about. You go to the South, and I think they're much more inclined to say, what we've got is fine, let's keep, you know, the money in that, and let's keep using some of the same tools that we've been using. But again, you know, I think the rules of the game might be changing just a little bit. I can see us getting into a situation in agriculture where because of budget problems, because of a perception or the reality that the agricultural economy is strong, that we are going to see some very intense pressure to do something different, to get a little different rationale for the kinds of programs we put out there. And you know, some of those same factors that have been there in the past are going to be there, but I can see some pressure building to really drive a much deeper and more fundamental change than perhaps we've seen in the past.
You have not mentioned in our conversation, on or off mic, the WTO, the World Trade Organization. Is this organization a non-starter for the 2012 Farm Bill? I know ACRE would be WTO compliant, direct payments could be WTO compliant. They're not at this point. This is the international trade agreement, but when you have a discussion about Farm Bill with most folks these days, they don't bother to mention this organization.
it's something that, you know, people talk about, and, you know, I'm as much of a free trader and want to see progress in that regard as the next person. But I think, you know, fundamentally, the political situation at home, what it means back in my district, is first and foremost concern of the people that are casting these votes. And while WTO compliance will be something that will, you know, be brought up, I'm sure at some point in time, it's a consideration we're going to have to look at. I don't see it as being a huge factor, particularly looking to 2012, that's really going to drive any kind of change of a fundamental nature. It may be another issue that people will raise to try to justify one means or another.
Let's stay with Farm Bill, but switch kind of topics. Hit conservation for me, whether that's the Conservation Reserve Program, the CSP, Conservation Security Programs. Where do you stand? What would you like to see changed? What do you think should happen?
We're very concerned about where those programs are going to go. We fought hard last time to get more money in conservation. We think there's a lot of public support for funding and conservation programs. And one of the things a lot of people may not understand is the Farm Bill conservation programs are really the largest conservation environmental expenditure in the whole federal government. And so it's significant in terms of agriculture having the resources it needs and the help it needs to be the good stewards that we all want to be. It's also a program that a lot of people turn to when budgets get tight to say we can trim there. And we think that's short-sighted. And, you know, certainly we're going to be looking and trying to take leadership in how can we be more effective in terms of using the dollars that we've got. But the bottom line is we think that public commitment to make sure we're protecting the resources that provides the bounty that we have in agriculture is pretty doggone important. And we're going to do what we can to make sure that remains a very high priority.
What types of ideas do you have?
Well, you know, one of the things that gets very difficult is, you know, clearly we know as the years go on that there are some areas that are probably more critical in terms of an environmental impact than others. And the more we can do to help give weighting to those areas that may be in a particular part of a watershed or in a particular watershed, that can get an environmental benefit, you know, of a significant nature. We need to try to identify those areas and make sure they get the resources or at least get extra emphasis in having access to the resources that are needed. Another issue that's been a perennial issue and it's difficult, particularly when you look at the budget, is that of technical assistance. You know, we've got farmers that want to do things from a conservation standpoint, but NRCS just doesn't have the people out there, the ability to get to those folks and do the plans to be able to deliver the cost share dollars. And that's another area. I know there's a big group of conservation interests in Washington that are working hard to figure out, you know, how do we get that kind of technical assistance to producers so that they can be the good stewards, they can apply the conservation practices they want to apply.
John Shull, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you very much. I always enjoy it.
John Shull is the president of the American Farmland Trust. I'll return in just 2 minutes when we'll talk with climatologist Steve Hilberg about the agricultural weather forecast. Don't forget, Commodity Week should be up on the website or will be by about 6 o'clock this evening at willag.org. Our guests this week include Murray Wise of Murray Wise & Associates and Darren Fry of Water Street Solutions.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
It's National Pizza with the Works, except Anchovies Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1908, William Keith Brooks died, an influential zoologist. He was a champion for the conservation of the Chesapeake Bay oyster. In 1926, Jack Ryan was born. Before helping to develop the Barbie doll for Mattel, Ryan worked for the Pentagon designing missiles. Ryan invented articulated joints for Barbie, and he was also responsible for the pull string that made Mattel dolls talk. And yes, there is a farm girl Barbie, complete with denim overall shorts and a pink label John Deere t-shirt. A trucker cap and emblem belt buckle completes the ensemble. In 1936, the first U.S. gardening show debuted on TV. In 1954, Ellis Island stopped serving as the chief immigration station for the United States. 20 million immigrants went through Ellis Island in its 62 years of operation. And in 1956, ice cubes, anyone? The largest iceberg was reported in the South Pacific. It was 208 miles long by 60 miles wide. That's the size of Belgium. And that's this day in agricultural history.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City. Steve Hilberg is on the phone line today to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with us. Thank you so much, Steve, for doing that. Let's take a look back first at what's been happening in the world of our area, the Midwest, for this past week, please.
Well, as cold as it was the first week of November, Todd, it's been that warm or warmer this week. We've had very mild weather here in the Midwest, and as anybody who's lived here any number of years knows, we can have some truly miserable Novembers where it's cloudy and rainy all the time, but we've had almost 2 weeks now, sunshine, and this week we've seen temperatures well into the 70s. A few temperature records have been set around the state, so and no rain up till today, except in some northern Illinois areas got some rain yesterday. So it's been in really good shape. Overall, we're running a little bit ahead of normal for the month of November as we come to our midpoint, and that's because we were pretty cool the first half and pretty warm the second week. So it's all sort of averages out.
The rainfall is coming here in Kansas City. We had a little rainfall overnight, and at the time of this recording, we're getting a bit of rainfall as well. How much do you think we might catch in the next couple of days? And is this the first in a series of rains and a change in the pattern or not?
Well, I think, we are going to be seeing a change in the pattern. As far as precipitation, we'll be getting some, this front will be moving through most of Illinois during the day tomorrow. Right now it looks like it probably will be east of the state into Indiana by late afternoon, early evening. We'll probably see some showers, maybe even a rumble or two of thunder tomorrow. Rainfall amounts aren't going to be that great. I'm thinking at this point maybe a couple isolated half-inch amounts, but mostly around the quarter. This isn't a major rain-producing system. It's more frontally related, so it's going to be pretty much a quick hitter. And the other factor is we've had continually dry air over us, so it's really tough to get some moisture into these systems. But after this goes through, it looks like we're in for a pretty cool week next week with temperatures actually back again below normal. And right now, looking at the latest, I would not be surprised that we might see some sprinkles or showers toward the middle of the week, and some of that might actually be some wet snowflakes, so especially for the northern half of Illinois. Nothing probably that will accumulate, but it'll certainly remind us that winter's on the way.
And so highs in the upper 20s, low 30s then for next week?
Well, if we get any of that kind of white stuff, it probably tend to be overnight when it's colder. But I think highs next week, we could have, especially by Wednesday or Thursday, seeing highs only in, maybe in the low 30s north and low 40s in far southern Illinois. So it'll be pretty darn cool because normally this time of year we're seeing highs typically are just around 50 degrees in central Illinois, mid-50 south, upper 40s, mid-40s in the north. So we'll be rather much cooler than normal next week.
Steve, thanks so much for being with us.
All right, Todd.
Hey, Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, funded in part by NOAA. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City, urging you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. We'll post Commodity Week with Murray Wise there by about 6 o'clock this evening.